Hello, you are listening to the Community Campfire's musical sesh this week. I'm Mitch Elliott. Today, we are joined in the studio by Frank Lynch. Frank is one of our mighty volunteer DJs, and you can hear him on Monday nights right here on KPCW. And on top of that, Frank is our resident deadhead. Frank, welcome to the program.
Gee, thanks, Mitch. It's great to be on the other side.
Well, over the past week, the world has reacted with great sadness as the original Grateful Dead member, Bob Weir, has passed away. In his memory, Frank, I wanted to talk to you about him and his impact he had on music. Before we talk about Bobby, let's establish a little bit about the Grateful Dead. So, Frank, who were the Grateful Dead? When were they formed with members? Just give me the basics.
That's a great question. I think their very first show is 1965. Yeah, 1965, members were Jerry Garcia, Bob Weir, Phil Lesh, Mickey Hart, and Billy Kreutzmann, who are the two drummers.
Okay, so those are the original members.
The original five members, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the Dead were obviously a band, but they were also more than just a band, right? They were a scene, they were a culture. What made them different than the other bands coming out of the 60s?
You know, there's so many things that you could probably look at, but they're, well, I always look back at community. They mm-hmm. they built a community. They had such a unique experience. They were the first band to let people tape their shows. You know, Jerry Garcia said on an interview with David Letterman many years ago, you know, like when the music's done with it, you know, when we're done, they can have it.
Big concerts, but you don't sell as many records as other traditional
concert groups.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, you don't mind people taping your music in concerts.
Not particularly.
Now,
no.
Why? That seems to be defeating the idea of selling records.
Well, if we ever make a real good record, then probably they'll rush out and buy that anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the tapes bring back memories to them and all that kind of stuff.
And the shows are never the same ever.
Yeah.
I mean, not even ever. You know what I mean? And
sometimes they're remotely the same.
Yeah, sort of. And when we're done with it, they can have it. You know.
Which is so different because bands were created to make money, sell records, do all the other stuff. And this particular band seemed more inclined just to build community, which is always the centerpiece, I think, of everything about them.
So, Frank, what's the deal with the recording and the tapes at all these shows? That's kind of a unique thing that the Dead does, no?
It was extremely unique. Again, I think, as I mentioned before, like Jerry, the music was, the way that they've used it is the music belonged to the people, and they were only there, you know, as a transmitter of where it was coming from. And that was always really cool. After my first show, I got a couple of bootlegs. I'm like, wow, that's really interesting. And that's doing interesting things. And they just decided that was the way they were going to go. They literally changed the face of music for a long period of time because it wasn't about album sales. It was about building the community.
Yeah. And I mean, logistically, how would it work? Would people show up with like tape recorders and stuff, or like how did they get their own unique bootleg?
Not only did they show up with tape recorders, they had their own section. There was a taper section. You would request tapers tickets when you ordered your tickets. That you used to be able to, instead of going through Ticketmaster and other stuff, they had Grateful Dead ticket sales at San Rafael, California. I remember it quite well. At college, it was always really fun when I was at Richmond because everybody show up at the post office the same day because we're all putting our mail order stuff in, and people wanted tapers. Tapers tickets, they'd show up, they have their mics, and they'd have their, you know, and then the technology changed over the years. I taped a couple of shows with some friends, and it was, always, again, it's a culture within a culture.
Right.
And it was also really neat.
Yeah. Well, the Dead were pioneers of that jam band sound. It was hard to really narrow down exactly what sound they are. For those who have absolutely no idea, like, can you kind of describe the Dead sound to them?
Yeah, you know, their roots were really in bluegrass. So Bobby and Jerry started off in a bluegrass band. I think Mickey's the one who started, or maybe actually Billy was the one who came right after that, and then they got Phil, and who was a classically trained bassist, which is very interesting, and added Mickey later. But they came from real bluegrass roots. And then they just started to get together and create music that was different from where they started, but it was really music that never really had an end. It never felt like it had an end. It had a direction. It sort of had a middle where you were never quite sure where it was going to end up, and that it ended at some place. But you know, they were famous for starting a song, Sugar Magnolia, for example, in one show and ending it three shows later. There was always this unknown quantity of the music they played.
And we'll talk more about that in the later section. But I wanted to get into a little bit of that culture that you mentioned.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Frank, tell me about your personal experience. When did you go to your first Grateful Dead show?
Yeah. 1984, spring tour, Hampton Coliseum in Hampton, Virginia. Boy, and I was not a Grateful Dead fan before. I actually started DJing in college, so I just got in that particular genre as well. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of walked into the show and immediately felt like family. You know, I had an interesting day, we'll say, that day, and I wasn't quite feeling 100%. And I was sitting in the hall, and 10 people came up to me, and they're like, hey, you're going to be great. Keep going. I'm like, oh, my God, these are my people.
Yeah.
And it just is such an embracing, you know, imperfect community, but the focus was always on the community.
Is it true that the Dead didn't really have set lists for their shows?
Yes and no. They had set lists. They would, as they got into the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, but they would deviate from them. I think in their very early days, they sort of made them up as they went along. But there was one of the treats always was, hey, here's what the set list was, and here's what the actual show was as you got along and watching them. So, you know, there was always an improvisational aspect of that. And that, I guess maybe if you added to the community, you never really knew what was going to happen. And that was the excitement of being there.
Right. It was a truly unique experience from show to show.
Yeah. They never played the same. I would say they would never repeated a song every three shows. They would not repeat a song.
Gotcha.
And no show is exactly the same because they played the song differently every single time.
So on that first show, you're there. You realize that this is an amazing community. Is that when you just said, you know, okay, I'm going to be a Deadhead, or did it take a couple more shows for you to kind of identify?
No. So I remember that, and that's, you know, probably September, I think, ish. And then in 1985, my next two shows were Richmond Coliseum, November 1st and 2nd. I'm frightening that I remember that. and those two shows, like the first one was like, wow, this is really cool. And those are like, wow, I need to do more of this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, over Jerry died in 1995. From 1984 to 1995, I saw 105-ish shows all around the country. You know, more than some, less than others. Mm-hmm. But each one was just this incredible. The shows themselves, but the excitement up to the shows. It just was like, hey, this family's coming back together, and we're going to do it for a couple days in a row, and we're going to go home. We're going to have this great feeling about it, and then we're going to do it again. And it's sort of life-affirming, if I could use that term.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to put it, man. This style that the Dead has done, there's also people following in its footsteps with other bands. What do you think it is about this culture that seems to not just transcend the Dead, but go, you know, spread out into other bands as well?
Well, I mean, honestly, if you look back to the roots go back to jazz, where jazz was never the same. You never played the song the same way. You always had structure within that, but even outside of that, you could play. I think there's this, at least as humans, and as particular humans, Jerry Garcia famously said years ago, they said, why are the Grateful Dead so popular? Mm-hmm. He goes, you know, not everybody likes licorice, but the people who like licorice really like licorice. And I always thought that was the coolest thing, because it is, might not be for you, and that's okay. But for the people who do it, I think they crave that excitement, that unknowing, and really the possibility of what anything, any music can bring.
So as time has passed, the Dead have had a litany of stars that have been part of the band. Can you name some of those stars that have gone through and been a part of the Grateful Dead?
Well, you know, so the latest incantation, excuse me, is John Mayer, obviously, with Dead & Company. John is, that's a whole other thing that we could talk about forever. Bruce Hornsby played with the Dead for a while. The Dead had some sort of curse with their keyboardists, and they've all passed away.
Yep.
Always makes me think back to Spinal Tap when the drummer always died of a tragic gardening accident. Yeah. You know, funny and sad all at the same time. I was at Brett Midland's, my personal favorite as far as keyboardists go. I was at his very last show in Tinley Park in Chicago in 91, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So you sort of had rotating people there, and Bruce came in and played with them for quite a while. And of course, they played with everybody. I mean, Bobby would, you know, after Jerry passed away, would go on and play with anybody. There'd be a bar around the corner, somebody's playing Dead tunes, and he'd drop in. It was really quite cool. You know, Mayer was, that's a whole other, Dead & Company was a whole other version that was lots of people liked, some people didn't like. Mm-hmm. But here's a guy who was a pop star and he gravitated to the music of the Grateful Dead, and quite honestly, my opinion, did it unbelievably well. Didn't do it like Jerry Garcia, did it like John Mayer with sort of a overtone of Jerry Garcia. And, you know, like I said, for a lot of people it worked. I spent a lot of time at the Sphere and a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm sure those were some pretty cool shows to go to.
Amazing.
And I'm sure you're glad you went when you could.
100%.
Yeah. So let's shift our attention now to Bobby Weir. As we know, as I mentioned earlier, Bobby passed away earlier this week of lung disease. And I've never seen an impact quite like Bob Weir has in this station in particular. There's been other artists who have died while I've worked here at KPCW, and people would request here and here. It has been every shift, every part of the week, and it just, I think, really shows what an impact he's had on music. So can you tell us a little bit about Bob Weir? Who was he?
Well, he was one of the co-founders of the Dead. He started when he was 17 years old. As always, when people pass away, you even learn more about them. And I've learned lots about him over the years. But I read about him the other day where he was actually practicing in a band. I think he was at the acid test, where he had to go back and take a test for school the next morning or something. And then he did it like a couple months later. He's like, well, forget the school thing. I'm just going to go.
Yep.
Never finished high school. And he, you know, it's interesting. Bob, in the Grateful Dead world, Jerry was always sort of the lead. But Jerry was a guy who just very rarely showed emotion. He would just hang out there and play. And while I'm not a musician, you could sort of hear the music they played was incredibly complicated, which I think was a lot of the draw. And people, you know, you don't realize it until you get into it. But Bobby was always the sidekick. And it was, people used to joke all the time as you went to shows in the 80s and 90s, you know, Bobby was the rock star. He'd wear the awful short shorts that were denim. It's great. I heard an interview with his daughters making fun of him. It was so awesome because they were terrible. But he was the guy who was out front and throwing his arms around, and Jerry would just stand there. And then when Jerry passed away in 95, over a period of time, Bobby took over this mantle, this sort of wise old sage, and did the same thing for Mayer. There's a great video of Mayer and Dead & Company playing in L.A., I think it was Greek Theater. And Mayer goes over, and he's going to be a rock and roll star next to Bobby, and Bobby just sort of grabs his guitar, takes his guitar, and he's like, get the hell out of here. And he changed roles, and he became this kind, wise, inspiring guy. So this amazing thing the other day, he talked about dying, and I don't mean to go there, but he's like, yeah, I'm not afraid of dying.
Mm-hmm.
He viewed dying as the next big adventure. He's like, life is where we know what life is. We have it. Like, we don't know. The death thing is the unknown thing. And he said, for me, death is the big reward for a life well lived. And it's so interesting to see the arc of his life as a young, crazy rock star to somebody who became this amazing, old, sage, kind human being that was supportive of music everywhere he went. He would question things, and he was always about social good. So for me, that would just, you know, resonated tremendously.
He's got a different style of guitar playing than most guitarists. Could you describe that sound to us?
No, not at all. And I say that, you know, it's interesting because, again, I read a lot about it, but what I have read about both Garcia and Weir is they played in between the notes. Another interview I saw, it was with Dan Rather and Bobby a handful of years ago, so he was older. And Dan Rather asked about Jerry. He's like, was Jerry really a tough taskmaster? And Bobby's like, no. Sometimes he'd point me in a direction and hope I would get there. And when I didn't get there, he's like, okay, well, we'll do this now. And I didn't get there, but we'll do this. Maybe we can do this thing. And he said, all I did is I played music and I tried to follow his lead and delight him. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. Like, just this lack of ego. And a guy who was truly a rock star.
Yeah.
To be able just to want to fulfill the prophecy of the music and that band.
Yeah. And he's got a great beard, too.
Spectacular beard. his younger days, not so much. He very much looked like the Lorax as he gotten older.
Well, when did Bob Weir first hook you in as, you know, when you were listening? What was a moment where you heard him and you're like, that's amazing?
You know, it's funny. My favorite Grateful Dead song is a lesser-known song called Black Throated Wind. It's on the Ace album. But there's a great line in there that just resonated with me. It's, you ain't gonna learn what you don't wanna know.
Full of the blues and trying to lose. You ain't gonna learn what you don't wanna know. So I give you my...
And I just... Man, it just, for me, that's life.
Yeah.
You can be as ignorant as you want and without getting into politics, look where we are. People just, they taking sides and they're not learning and they don't care. And that to me is like, wow. And he and this guy, John Barlow, ironically, John Barlow was, so Jerry Garcia had Robert Hunter as his songwriter. They worked together, and Bobby worked with John Barlow. And they actually met in reform school, which is amazing, because that's how bad a student he was. That was the first time to me deeply like, wow, his lyrics and his music are really amazing. And he would take other songs too. Another favorite of mine is When I Paint My Masterpiece, which is a Bob Dylan song. But he took it, and Dylan's song is 3 minutes. He made it like the 6 minute, well, masterpiece for lack of a better term, that was just beautiful. It's sort of this opus thing. And he created, from things that even existed, he created more out of them. As he got older, as I got older, I appreciated that and understood it more.
I wanted to mention that there seems to be a real fandom of Deadheads in Park City. What do you think it is about the mix of Grateful Dead plus Mountain Town that just works so well?
No, there's Grateful Dead fans everywhere. and I don't say that jokingly. It does. There is. You know, God, what is, I saw something the other day about why do Grateful Dead and skiing seem to go so well together? So maybe to your point. But there is, you know, think about the ski bums, or at least back in the day when you could afford to be a ski bum and show up in a town, you're going to have more of a free spirit. And that music fits well into that. And there's been, you know, lots of good bands that have fit that same, you know, sort of genre. You know, it's always interesting to see the music that comes here. I'm obviously a huge fan of the Song Summit. I think they bring a lot of good stuff here. But I don't think as a town, I think we're more of a, I don't know, free-spirited music town, because I think that's, you know, look where we live.
Yeah.
You look out over the mountains every day. I mean, how can you not just love life? And I think that's a piece of it too, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. Well, what are any closing thoughts you have about Bob Weir? Anything that you think someone out there should know about him, or any song that comes to mind that really feels like it encapsulates what he did well?
You know, it's funny, as always, I have a million Grateful Dead songs going through my head at any given time. And as soon as you talk to people who do the same, they know what it is. There's a song, Looks Like Rain, that I just had going through my head. And it's, one of the lyrics is, I've gotten used to having you around. My landscape would be empty if you're gone.
It's just that to having you around, my landscape would be empty if you were gone.
And people really realizing that, I think, a little bit to your point about the stuff at the station this week. My first show was in 1984. I am 59 years old. I have dedicated two-thirds of my life to seeing Grateful Dead-type bands, including the Grateful Dead. And I don't know, I think it's made me a better person. And I always hope, we should always, me personally, I look for inspiration in everything that I do. Being inspired by music is one of the drivers. We should always walk out of music feeling good about ourselves, good about our fellow humans. And I think Bob Weir and the Grateful Dead and every incantation of that has done exactly that.
Well, thank you, Frank, for sharing your experience and letting us know about the Grateful Dead today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it.